Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, Trump versus the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments on his bid for presidential immunity.
This is a huge question of constitutional law. Are future presidents, or in this case, a past president, immune for official acts during their presidency?
I'm Kevin Hurton, and this is The Take. The question before the justices today is whether Donald Trump should have absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for acts committed while he was president.
The Supreme Court has agreed to decide if Donald Trump has immunity from prosecution on election interference charges.
The president has to have immunity. This has nothing to do with me. This has to do with a president in the future for 100 years from now. If you don't have immunity, you're not going to do anything.
Now, legally, it's uncharted territory simply because we've never had a former president like Donald Trump before.
For the first time ever, a former president of the United States has been indicted and will face criminal charges. A grand jury.
Since he left office, Donald Trump has been in and out of court.
Is related to hush money payments to former porn star Stormy Daniels.
Trump is set to appear inside a Florida courtroom. As a matter of fact, we think he just arrived a few moments ago in the federal criminal case over his handling of classified documents.
A U.S. appeals court ruled that Donald Trump must face civil lawsuits over his role in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by his supporters.
He's charged criminally in four separate cases, and if this Supreme Court hearing goes his way, it could make charges in two of those cases go away.
They were peaceful people. These were great people. The crowd was unbelievable. The love in the air, I've never seen anything like it.
The first is for his role in the January 6th U.S. Capitol riot that sought to overturn the 2020 elections. The second is over his handling of classified documents, which he allegedly took from the White House and hid at his Florida home. So how did he wind up at the Supreme Court? We talked to someone who knows the law well enough to teach it.
I am Chara Torres-Spellacy. I'm a professor of law at Stetson University College of Law. I'm also a fellow at the Brennan Center. And I'm in Florida right now.
So, Chara, the Supreme Court is hearing Trump versus the United States. It's a case with absolutely enormous consequences. I mean, the possibilities range from Trump possibly going to prison to the U.S. presidency being imbued with almost king-like powers. So the stakes could not be higher here. With that in mind, can you just explain what each side will be arguing in court?
So President Trump's side has been arguing that he has absolute presidential immunity and that he cannot be prosecuted. The government will argue that is ridiculous. We've never decided that a president is absolutely immune from criminal prosecution. And to the contrary, all of the cases go the exact opposite way. So the Supreme Court has heard immunity claims from President Nixon, from President Clinton, and even from President Trump while he was in the Oval Office. And in each of those cases, the Supreme Court said there is not absolute presidential immunity. We've never had a president who has been charged with crimes before. The closest we've ever gotten was Richard Nixon.
I had no prior knowledge of the Watergate break-in. I neither took part in nor knew about any of the subsequent cover-up activities.
Some of his behavior during Watergate was arguably criminal, but he got a blanket pardon from President Ford. So we never had the experience of seeing Nixon crimes prosecuted in the federal courts or any court, really. So we're in a new territory, and we don't know what the Supreme Court will latch on to. They may latch on to the idea of some of the things he did on January 6th or the lead up to January 6th were official acts. And if they look at it through that lens, then they're much more likely to immunize some of what President Trump did and thereby immunize future presidents for their official acts. That will have implications for presidents not named Trump.
So just to step back to make sure that our listeners know exactly how we got here, Donald Trump was charged in what we're calling colloquially the January 6th case.
A federal grand jury has voted to indict the former president for his attempt to overturn the results of an election he lost.
That was before Judge Shutkin at the district court level. That case was moving along, and then Donald Trump made a motion saying that he should have this absolute immunity. Judge Shutkin looked at that case. She decided he does not have this absolute immunity. Donald Trump appealed, which is his right, to the appeals court. Then they ruled that he does not have the immunity. But the upshot of taking this case is that some of his trials remain on hold.
Former President Trump has so far successfully delayed his January 6th criminal trial, with his lawyers arguing he has presidential immunity.
So the court has been criticized for A, taking this case in the first place, and B, setting what some consider to be a leisurely schedule to hear it. What do you think? Do you think that the criticism is warranted here?
The Supreme Court can do essentially whatever it wants in most cases. They have complete control over their docket, and they've been known to sit on a case. Like, there's a really famous one. It's called McGrane versus Daughtry. And they sat on that case for 3 years. It's a case that came out of the Teapot Dome scandal. Like, no one even remembers it. But on the other hand, if you look at the other extreme with Bush versus Gore, there they processed that case at enormous speed. So the timetable is ultimately up to the Supreme Court. The court is hearing the Trump immunity case at the end of April. This is their last scheduled opportunity to hold an oral argument. So it's at the last possible date. They could order a second oral argument. This has happened in several famous cases. Roe v. Wade was argued twice. Citizens United was argued twice. Brown versus Board of Education was argued twice. So if people are mad at the Supreme Court now for their pace, I could just see, you know, people's heads exploding if they decide that this is one of those big cases that they want to get right. So they're going to ask for another oral argument.
What the potential schedule could mean for the presidential election after the break.
The Inside Story podcast dissects, analyzes, and helps define major global stories. We get into the details with experts who explain how policies affect people. The Inside Story podcast by Al Jazeera. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Chara, few possible outcomes here. First one is that Trump wins, is granted full immunity. If that does happen, what does that mean both for him and the future of the office of the presidency?
Well, if he is granted full immunity, that would apply not only to him, but to future presidents. I think we might see more extreme actions coming out of a presidency if the person who is occupying that office knows that no matter what they do, that criminal law will not attach to their actions while they're president. So you could have more blatant bribery occur in such a situation, or the SEAL Team 6 hypothetical of murdering political opponents might become a real thing.
That hypothetical comes from a now famous question posed by a judge when this case was at the appeals court level.
Could a president order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? That's an official act in order to SEAL Team 6.
And I think that's part of why many commentators are quite concerned that they hope that the Supreme Court will not go down that road.
Mm. And Trump keeps saying that this is a slippery slope. This is dangerous for the office.
The president of the United States, and I'm not talking about myself, I'm talking about any president, has to have immunity. Because if you take immunity away from the president, so important, you will have a president that's not going to be able to do anything.
I mean, what do you make of those arguments?
It's hard to take that argument particularly seriously, as he is the only president. We've had 46, and he's the only president to face criminal charges. So I think the average president does not have this problem because they're not committing anything close to a crime.
Okay, so now, option number two. He is not granted full immunity. What does that mean for Trump and his legal ability to be president and the possibility of having a trial this year before the election?
So if the Supreme Court agrees with Judge Chutkan and the D.C. Circuit and comes to the conclusion that there is no such thing as total presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, then all of his prosecutions are back on. And in particular, the January 6th case that's being litigated in Judge Chutkan's courtroom will go back to starting.
I think Judge Chutkan said they'd need about 90 days notice to get the trial started. So if they rule in late June, there could theoretically be a trial that starts in September.
Yeah, and the timing is hard to game out, in part because the Trump side keeps filing different motions in these various court cases, some of which seem just calculated to generate delay.
Former President Donald Trump returning to his playbook of attempting to delay another trial.
It's sort of hard to keep these trial dates set in stone when you have a litigant who has sort of very entrepreneurial lawyers, let's put it that way.
That's a very nice way of putting it.
Who are willing to put, in some cases, I would say, their law licenses on the line, because some of these motions are really almost frivolous. But nonetheless, they are willing to file them, and they're willing to do appeals all the way to the Supreme Court. So it's going to be very difficult to keep these trial dates on the calendar for this year.
Yeah. There is nothing that would bar Donald Trump from running for office or being elected president, even if he is convicted, even incarcerated, right?
Yeah, this is one of the strange aspects of the U.S. Constitution. And I know there have been thousands of attempts to amend the Constitution over the years, and we still only have the 27 amendments that we have right now. Nonetheless, I sort of suspect that after this experience with Trump, that an amendment that might be able to actually get all the way into the Constitution would be one that says, if you are convicted of a crime, you cannot be president. But we don't have that in the Constitution right now, which means that people who are under indictment can run for office, clearly. And strangely, people who have been convicted of crimes can run for office and presumably could be seated as president. I mean, it does become pretty bizarre pretty quickly.
Yeah. How about the fact that in some states you can't even vote for president while in prison for a felony?
Oh, yes. I'm in Florida. So is the former president. In Florida, if you are incarcerated, then you lose your right to vote. So you could have this very surreal situation in the 2024 election where President Trump as a voter cannot vote for himself.
Wow.
But he's still on the ballot because there's nothing that prevents him from being on the ballot.
So, Chara, there is the third option that neither side wins outright, that the court finds there is partial immunity and that some of the charges might be covered by that partial immunity, and that kicks it back to the district court level to hash it out. So that might be a not an outright victory for Trump, but from his delaying tactic perspective, that is a victory, correct?
Well, if his goal is to push all of these cases beyond November of 2024, then all of these arguments where it took courts time to decide them is a win, because it makes it much more likely that some or all of these cases get pushed beyond the November election. I think in his mind, he's much more electable if he's not been convicted of something. And with the possibility of a self-pardon, he might have the ability in the future to actually make some of these cases completely disappear. But on the other hand, all of this delay tactic may put these criminal cases right before the election when voters are really paying attention. So you may have sort of the spectacle of two or more of these cases coming to life right before everyone has to vote. And so in that sense, it may completely backfire.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Chloe K. Lee and Farhanisa Kampana, with Suri El-Khalili, Ashish Malhotra, Amy Walters, Nagin Oliayi, Khalid Sultan, Catherine Nguyen, David Enders, Sonia Bhagat, Zainab Badr, and me, Kevin Hurton, in for Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer. And Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.